And a good Sunday morning. My microphone's falling off. That's not a good start.
It's Sunday.
It is Sunday. Yeah. And it's a little chilly outside.
A little windy.
I left our poor guests stranded outside in the cold.
Well, I'm glad they didn't blow away.
They did not, thankfully. So thanks for coming on. Thanks for listening this morning, folks up and at them. It's a little chilly, a little windy, kind of fallish. I got to say, if I'm moving slow today, I was at that Gopher game last night, Josh, and I didn't get to sleep till about midnight. We're going to leave early, and then we're like, we better not leave. And goodness gracious, it was 15 seconds, and we're wondering if we're going to lose. But we won.
I decided to stay late and go to the John Hines press conference after the Wild game because I was la-di-da up in press for the opener yesterday.
La-di-da. Okay.
Well, stayed for the presser, and I was like, man, this is probably not a best decision of being out to get up at 5.
Well,
I also didn't get home until like 11 o'clock midnight. So.
Well, we're going to just get through it. It's going to be a good day.
Yeah.
I have a feeling.
It's going to be a great day.
Well, every week we talk about a different health topic, and whether it's your heart, your liver, your ears, your eyes, your nose, we do talk about lungs a lot. And I'm going to say that because I have a personal connection to my own lungs in that, remember, I had lung cancer. It was discovered, actually, it's 4 years ago. I can't believe that. So I've sort of been sunken into the world of lungs and lung health and always paying attention to sort of what's going on in the world around lungs and lung disease and treatments that are available and new information that's coming out. And there was a story out this week about people that are most at risk, most vulnerable to harder to breathe air that comes with climate change may inadvertently be adding to the problem. That's a study that was released by JAMA, the Journal of American Medicine. Is that right? Yeah. Association. Yep. 34 million Americans have chronic lung disease, including 28 million who have asthma, according to the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America. And the number is expected to grow as higher temperatures bring more weather phenomena that trigger breathing, like drought, floods, and fires that we're experiencing in Minnesota. To treat conditions like this, asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, millions of Americans use what doctors often call meteor dose inhalers. They are small boot-shaped devices that spray doses of medication right into your lungs. A lot of people know what they are. They send a burst of propellants, and they're called HFAs. So anyway, this journal found that by using these inhalers, it actually contributes to the problem because it messes up the atmosphere. So I'm going to introduce our guest now and stop trying to bumble through that study. Abby Begno is the University of Minnesota professor, assistant professor at the medical school, and she is also a pulmonologist. And Terry Cannon is also in studio. She is executive director of A Breath of Hope, which is an organization near and dear to my heart. And we want to start out and get your reaction to that study that more people are using inhalers, so then that whatever that puts out into the world can actually add to the problem. So first of all, good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Susie. Nice to be here.
Yes. Happy belated birthday to everyone. Abby had a great big birthday party. A lot of fun. A lot of kids.
Thank you. A lot of kids. Actually, my daughter's birthday today, so we'll have to say happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Abby.
Too.
Yeah. I mean, Libby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what you just read the study this morning. For the purposes of gathering news, when you see this, what is your initial response?
Well, what they're describing there, you know, you mentioned all of the people who have chronic lung disease. So chronic obstructive lung disease is usually thought of as asthma or COPD. And what that means is that people have narrowing of their bronchial tubes. And this can happen due to, you know, sometimes it happens from birth. Sometimes it happens due to exposure over time, like exposure to cigarette smoke and other pollutants in the air. And so, you know, they're saying that climate change and the smoke and the pollution and the heat events and the fires can actually worsen the state of people's lung health, causing them to need these inhalers. Most of these inhaled medications are what we call bronchodilators. So it's medications to open up the bronchial tubes. In the asthma condition, the bronchial tubes are narrowed or tightened, and those medications help to relax and open up the bronchial tubes. But those medications have these propellants in them. The HFA is hydrofluoroalkane, which is a propellant. But you might remember years ago, CFCs and chlorofluorocarbons and all the talk about that and anything that you spray, right? I mean,
hairspray,
the whipped cream, the hairspray. I grew up in the South, so for us, it was always thinking about air conditioners. Like air conditioners have these types of things in them too. And so that's kind of how they propel the medication from the mouth all the way down the bronchial tree into the lungs. And they did change whenever the legislation and regulations came out around chlorofluorocarbons years ago, and they changed them to this HFA now. But it's still a propellant, and it still is essentially a pollutant. And so this is just one example of ways in which our efforts to respond to climate change and deal with the effects of climate change actually worsen it, right? Like the world's getting hotter, so we all use more energy and electricity to cool our homes and keep ourselves comfortable and safe, and that adds to pollution. So it's sort of unfortunately a vicious cycle.
Yeah. It's interesting though, isn't it? The world that we're in now with smoke and wildfires and lungs. I mean, yeah. It's just even people with good lungs.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, anytime you hear about bad air quality days, smoke that's coming from Canada or wherever it is, I mean, we're certainly contributing to smoke too with pollutants from, you know, vehicles and other types of energy that we use. Mm. You hear about, you know, here's who's vulnerable, small children, mm-hmm, older mm-hmm. people, people with lung disease. The truth is we are all vulnerable. Those quote-unquote vulnerable groups are the groups of people who are vulnerable to immediate effects. Like, I feel it right now. I have trouble breathing. I have to use an inhaler. I have to go inside. But all of us are vulnerable because essentially it's like we're all smoking. I mean, I think that's the most simplified way to understand to people. You know, I live near a trail, and so I often see people running and biking right past our house to go to the trail. And when the air quality is bad, you know, I'm like, if you wouldn't go smoke a pack of cigarettes today, you should not go running in the poor air quality, because running also makes you more vulnerable. You're increasing the amount of air that you're breathing into your lungs rather than just sitting.
Mm-hmm. I heard someone, a doctor, a pulmonologist, describe the heat, the conditions we were in, as like sunburning your lungs.
Okay, well, there you go.
Wow, that's pretty drastic.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your responding to that. I know we've got a lot to talk about because you mentioned there's a lot going on in the world of lungs right now, a lot of studies. What are you guys working on at the U right now? What are some topics that are happening?
Well, specifically around lung cancer, which is the area that I focus on the most. I mean, you're right. There's a lot going on with lungs. The University of Minnesota is a very a top level center for cystic fibrosis and lung transplant. And treating all of these different types of lung diseases. The area that I focus on is lung cancer. And of course, we've got a lot of stuff going on around the whole kind of spectrum of lung cancer. When we think about, you know, we think about lung cancer, we think about stuff from the component of diagnosis and screening and early detection. We think about, you know, treatment for lung cancer. And then we also think about survivorship and helping people to live healthy after a diagnosis of lung cancer. So we've got a lot of things going on in all of that. I don't know which one you want to talk about.
Well, I think we should take a break because we've talked past the time we're supposed to stop.
I've never done that before, by the way.
We want to also make sure we bring Terry into the conversation because you're talking about survivorship and education, and she is the executive director of A Breath of Hope, which is a wonderful organization that helps families and people that are going through it themselves. It's a great place that offers a tremendous amount of support for people that are going through it, have gone through it, and we're going to talk about a special event coming up as well, but we'll take our break. And when we come back, we'll continue with Abby Begnaud, University of Minnesota Associate Professor, Pulmonologist, and Terry Cannon, Executive Director of Breath of Hope, right after this. And we are back. It is 7:22 on a Sunday morning. I'm Susie Jones. Happy to have you with us. We're talking about lung health, lung disease, lung cancer as we move through this Sunday morning. In studio with me, Abby Begnaud is a University of Minnesota associate professor, also a pulmonologist. Terry Cannon, director, executive director of Breath of Hope, a lung cancer support organization. And we did invite your phone calls, 651-461-9226. Actually, I don't even think I said the number. We already got a question. And someone wonders about this oximeter measure of 0% oxygen just by putting the device on your finger.
A pulse oximeter?
Yeah.
Sounds like you're describing that. Yeah, what do they want to know about it?
How does it measure oxygen?
Oh, okay. Everyone's probably familiar with this. It's a little thing you put the tip of your finger on, yeah. And this is going to get kind of deep here, but the purpose of hemoglobin, red blood cells in your body, is to deliver oxygen around the body. The lungs are where the red blood cells get loaded up with oxygen, okay? So you breathe air in, you absorb oxygen into your lungs, the red blood cells swing through the lungs and pick up a fresh supply of oxygen. So the amount of oxygen that gets picked up in the lungs can be measured using this pulse oximeter, because it's looking basically at, it's going to put a little red light. If you've ever seen it, it makes you look like E.T. You got a little red light on your finger. It's putting little pulsed red light through your fingertip to figure out how the light is being absorbed. And so it can estimate the ratio, how much of the hemoglobin that's passing through your fingertip blood vessels that has oxygen and doesn't have oxygen. Because hemoglobin molecules that don't have oxygen attached to them absorb light differently than the hemoglobin molecules that have oxygen attached to them.
You're so smart. I never knew that. I've used that thing a lot. I liked it in the 90s. I want it in the 90s.
Yep, 90s is good.
A texter writes, my 19-year-old grandson has cancer, Ewing sarcoma. He was just diagnosed with fungus infection in his lungs. How does a person get fungus infection in their lungs?
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Ewing, I know.
Yeah, Ewing sarcoma is a disease that does usually affect young people. Everything we're breathing, I've kind of started using this analogy that our lungs are like air filters, right? You've seen an air filter before. Everything that you're breathing in the air around you is being filtered through your lungs to when you breathe air in. And so there's fungus particles all around us, all different types of mold and fungus. And many of those are harmful to no one who's healthy and has a normal immune system. But of course, often people who are fighting cancer are getting, strong medications that suppress their immune system. And so it is more common to get those types of fungal infections in people who have a suppressed immune system. So oftentimes just from breathing, different fungus, sometimes gardening and hiking and stuff like that.
Interesting. 651-461-9226 if you have a question for Abby. Terry, I want to ask you a little bit about some of the work that's done at Breath of Hope to support families that are going through situations like this woman's grandson, and what the organization does to support families.
Sure. Well, as Abby said, we are a nonprofit organization that is funding research, education, and support. And how we help lung cancer patients is through all of our survivorship programs. So that includes our mental health, and we've got some mindfulness audio companion that can be downloaded from our website. We've got physical resources and videos that you can watch and get back in shape after a lung cancer diagnosis. And then nutritional help, nutritional resources. We've got an app you can download to help with your nutrition when you're going through a cancer diagnosis. So all of that is part of our survivorship. But then we've got some really practical ways to help people too, with our driver program to help people get to their doctor's appointments, with support groups, with peer companionship, so many different resources, all available through our website and in person.
And that's A Breath of Hope?
A Breath of Hope.
Okay, good. Well, as I said, I've been involved since I got lung cancer myself, and it was November of 2021 that I had my car accident. And we're talking about diagnosis and lung disease, and I wonder, how often is it that someone finds their cancer inadvertently?
a lot of times. We do have screening for lung cancer now, just like you might screen for other common cancers. But screening for lung cancer is recommended for people over the age of 50 who have smoked cigarettes for a long time. Those are people who are at the highest risk of developing lung cancer. And even amongst that group, less than 20% of people who are eligible and who meet the criteria, being over 50, having smoked for a long time, have been screened. So the majority of people come through a lung cancer diagnosis through kind of accident, kind of like your story. They either had a scan for some other reason and then found a spot, or, you know, maybe they developed symptoms, cough or chest pain or something like that. Lung cancer, it has a high rate of a cure if you find it early. And so early detection is really important. So screening is one method of early detection, but other types of testing that you get for other reasons does sometimes inadvertently diagnose a lung cancer.
A chest x-ray. And talk about screening, both of you, because I know the organization is in support of getting more people screened, the potential for more people to be screened.
Right. We know that the top two ways that we're going to cure lung cancer is by early detection through screening and through having the best treatments. So having biomarker testing so that you can have a targeted therapy if you qualify for that. So the most important thing is early detection, so getting screened. So what A Breath of Hope does is we go out into the community and we spread awareness through tabling and activities and being on the radio with you, Susie, to make sure that anyone who is eligible asks their doctor about lung screening. So if you're over 50 and have a smoking history, you should be getting your low-dose CT scan so that if you were to have lung cancer, you can detect it early when it's the most treatable.
Did you want to add something, Ab?
Yeah, I will say that, you know, most people know about stages for cancer, right? Stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4. Stage 1 is usually less involved, and 4 is usually spread throughout the body. And so with screening, our goal is to find people in stage 1 when they just have a tiny little spot, they're not having any symptoms. We find it early. We have, you know, different advances for non-invasive or minimally invasive biopsy testing and treatment options so that there's a high chance of cure. And if you're listening and you know someone who's over 50 and you know smoked for a long time, do something good for them today and let them know. Ask them if they have had their lungs screened. The problem is most people who are eligible for screening don't quite know that it exists. And it's really hard for doctors and primary care clinics to figure out who's eligible for screening because they don't often know the extent of how much someone has smoked. They might know, oh, I used to smoke and I quit. Oh, great news. Okay, we move on. We don't talk about that anymore.
Because this texter just says, I'm 60 years old. I grew up in a house with smokers. 60 years ago, I grew up in a house with smokers. Today, at 68 years old, I'm having trouble with my lungs. Is it asthma, COPD, or what have you? And that's a good question. So this is an example of someone who may, in theory, no, they wouldn't get a screen.
So screening is only for individuals who have personally smoked cigarettes. It's common that people wonder about passive smoke exposure, secondhand smoke exposure. You know, the reality is for most people, the secondhand smoke exposure is a lot less intense than when you actually inhale it into your lungs yourself. So screening is not recommended for people who have been exposed to secondhand or passive smoke. It's really only applies to individual. And it's not a perfect criteria because being exposed to a lot of secondhand smoke does increase your risk a little bit. I think the other thing that this person's asking about is, you know, what's wrong with their lungs? We were just talking about your mom during the break. Difficulty breathing is not always a lung problem. Sometimes it's a heart problem. Sometimes it's other types of problems, muscular problems, etc. So you definitely need to see a doctor to get an evaluation for that. To determine if someone has asthma or COPD, we typically do lung function testing or spirometry to measure how quickly and how fast they can breathe.
And I think perhaps this person who's 68 wants to know how can I improve my breathing might start with a doctor visit to do that.
Yeah, in general, I tell people being active, maintaining a healthy weight, you know, good nutrition, like most of the things that you know that you think are common sense, avoiding exposure to smoke and other chemicals and pollutants in the air if you can at all.
Okay. It is 8:30, not. It's 7:32. Happy to have you with us on this Sunday morning again. Our guest in studio, Terry Cannon, Executive Director of A Breath of Hope, an organization that supports lung health and people that are going through lung cancer. Lots of great resources there. We'll talk about a special event coming up as well. Abby Begno is a University of Minnesota Associate Professor, a pulmonologist as well, and we invite your phone calls at 651-461-9226. We're back right after this. And we are back. We're talking about lung health. 651-461-9226. That is the number if you have a question for our guest in studio, Abby Begno, Dr. Abby Begno, University of Minnesota Associate Professor, also a pulmonologist, Terry Cannon, Executive Director of A Breath of Hope. And what I was thinking that we could talk a little bit about, Abby, for just a minute, is once someone has that diagnosis and we're seeing more and more lung cancer patients do well with different treatments that are actually keeping them alive longer than they might have been in earlier days. So biomarkers, kind of explain the treatments now around lung cancer.
Sure. Yeah. You know, lung cancer is changing. I mean, whatever you think you know about lung cancer from the past, maybe an uncle or a grandparent or somebody who might have had lung cancer, forget what you know. It's really changing. It's changing in a lot of ways. One, we are seeing some people who are younger or people who have never smoked cigarettes or very, very minimal smoking exposure who are getting lung cancer. And that's disappointing. But in general, survival around lung cancer and the numbers around lung cancer are actually improving. And that's for a lot of reasons. One is through early detection and screening. Not only screening. So screening means you know somebody who's at risk for getting a lung cancer and you go test them looking for lung cancer. But early detection also means people are getting testing for all kinds of reasons. People are getting more CT scans for, they're getting coronary calcium scans, or they're getting a scan to evaluate a, you know, a problem in their belly or something. And then we find it there. So it's kind of incidental or accidental findings. But all of those things improve early detection so we can find cancers earlier. So that is changing. The other thing that's changing is treatment options. We understand a lot more. And I say we. I'm not a medical oncologist. I don't do the research to discover this stuff. But in general, the field, we understand lung cancer and the biology and how lung cancer works and how lung cancer can be defeated much better than we used to. Many innovative treatments that include, you know, harnessing your body's immune system to respond to cancer and what we call targeted therapy. Terry mentioned earlier, biomarkers. And so now when someone is diagnosed with lung cancer, we don't just find out, okay, what type of lung cancer is it? Small cell, non-small cell. That's a very kind of old distinction. Now we look at, okay, what type of a lung cancer? It's an adenocarcinoma. So that tells us a specific subtype. And then we do all kinds of genetic testing to figure out exactly what is happening in that cancer. What gene mutation is happening so that we can target that abnormality? I usually give this example. So if you were hosting a dinner party and you had a guest coming over, you might just say something like, hey, do you have any allergies or are you a vegetarian? And then you just kind of pick whatever you think they might like to eat. But this targeted therapy option is kind of like sitting down and having an intense interview saying, okay, what do you like? Do you like shellfish? Do you like slimy stuff? Do you like spicy stuff? Do you have any texture issues? You know, do you like stuff that's crunchy? And then you can like really tailor a meal that will just absolutely knock your guest's socks off. And in this case, we're trying to knock the cancer's socks off and kick it out the door.
Nice. We actually have a phone call. Jane is on the line calling from Forest Lake. Good morning, Jane. You're on with Terry Cannon and Abby Begno. What's your question?
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Oh, great. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to the Breath of Hope. I have been involved in it with the walk. I lost my sister at 60 to lung cancer and my father at 52. And so my question is, I do get checked every year and I do have the nodules. Is there anything else I can do just because it seems like it's in my family history?
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in, Jane. It's nice to talk to you this morning. I'm sorry to hear about your father and your sister, but I'm really glad that you are taking a proactive role in your own health. Getting checked every year is important. You know, you mentioned lung nodules. Lung nodules are very common. Probably 1 in 3 people in Minnesota have lung nodules.
What is it?
And most of them are not cancer, which is the good news.
But are they just dots on your lungs?
It's a, yeah, technically a lung nodule is like a spot or a dot on your CT scan, or, you know, chest x-ray. But most of them are like little scars, little spots from something that you probably inhaled before, maybe a fungus like we talked about, and your body just took care of it and just kind of left a little spot of where it was there. So most of those are nothing to worry about, but definitely with that family history, you want to be getting a close check because there can be families where lung cancer runs in the family. And if you have a first degree family member, a sibling or a parent with lung cancer, that does mean that you have a higher risk than somebody who doesn't have a family member with lung cancer. You mentioned what else can you be doing? You know, we talked about taking care of yourself in general, avoiding smoke and, you know, exercising and having a good nutrition. The other thing that's really important we haven't talked about yet is radon testing. In Minnesota, 2 out of 5 homes have dangerously high levels of radon. Radon is a naturally occurring gas that comes from underneath the soil and can get into your home and circulate through your house. So in addition to everything you're already doing, if you haven't tested your home for radon, I would definitely recommend doing that.
And is that a part of Breath of Hope as well, Terry?
It is. It is. We talk about radon during January is Radon Awareness Month. And we even provide free kits to people.
Great.
To test their homes.
And the, talk about, we were just getting at November is...
November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. And we are going to be celebrating Lung Cancer Awareness Month, kicking it off with our gala on November 7th. And part of the what the gala does is raise money. And we are raising money this year for Hope Totes, which are tote bags with a blanket and a card and information about lung cancer that we'll be delivering to patients at cancer centers around the state because we know that when someone is diagnosed with a lung cancer, we want to surround them with a warm blanket and help them feel better as they're going through treatment.
And is right now, you know, it's November 7th, that's right?
November 7th.
And is it too late to, if someone's listening and they think, gosh, I would like to support that organization, I'd like to go to the gala, it's a lovely evening and, like we said, lots of good silent auction items to win?
Yeah, I encourage people. Yes, we are still accepting. People can buy a ticket or a table and come and join us.
And how do they find the organization if they want to get a ticket?
abreathofhope.org.
abreathofhope.org. And where is it this year?
This year is at the club at Golden Valley.
Otherwise known as the Golden Valley Country Club.
That's
right,
it.
Right on, I can't remember that
right
road.
On 55?
It's right near 55. Yeah. So we're going to take our last break. It is 7:46, and then we'll continue. Got some more questions as well, so we'll do that after this on News Talk 830 WCCO. And we are back with the last segment of our Health Hour. I'm Susie Jones, and in studio today, Dr. Abby Bagno, University of Minnesota Associate Professor, Pulmonologist, Terry Cannon, Executive Director of A Breath of Hope, which is holding a big gala coming up in November, November 7th. Tickets still available. So please, if you're listening this hour and you feel like being supportive of the organization, come and have a fun night, good food, good friends. 651-461-9226. We'll just kind of run through some of these because we've got some interesting ones. Then you can just sort of give us your feedback. Good morning. Is it possible to burn or injure your lungs from taking deep breaths in a steam room?
No.
Not at all?
No.
It does hurt, though. When you, it's hot.
Or, yeah, well, yeah. You know, people who have chronic lung disease especially sometimes are really bothered by that. You know, we talked about that earlier, heat and stuff. But no, you won't harm yourself.
Okay, that's good to know. This person just shared this. My best friend died of cancer, lung cancer, never smoked, but lived in the house where the husband smoked. So That's real, right?
I mean, that's definitely real. That is a that is certainly not an uncommon scenario. And again, we don't know, you know, when someone develops lung cancer, we can't say, oh, this is a smoking related cancer, or this is related to pollution, or this is there's a lot of occupational exposures. Again, radon. We don't know if this is a person who lived in a home with very high levels of radon their whole life either. So we really don't know what caused it in, you know, in an individual person who develops lung cancer.
Like, and talking about research and studies, are there studies that are checking what is the cause of cancer? Like, is there a way to correlate? Is radon causing X percentage of the cancers? Is there a way to sort of differentiate like that?
Not great, because usually these types of studies are what we call observational studies. You know, in medicine, the study that really helps you demonstrate a definitive causal link between two things is usually a prospective randomized trial, which means in advance, you pick people and you randomly assign one group to getting one thing and one group to getting another thing. So you can probably imagine you can't randomly assign people to, okay, you have to live in this house with high levels of radon your whole life, and then we'll figure out if you get cancer.
Oh, dear.
So it's all observational studies. So observational studies definitely show a conclusive link between cigarette smoking, radon exposure, air pollution, and developing lung cancer. But in any one person, you can never pinpoint which one was the, you know, which one was the cause.
This is one that I think many of us think about. I do. I have both my kids vape.
Mm-hmm.
And this texter says, what can I say to my adult son to encourage him to quit vaping? He seems healthy, but they just had a baby, and he doesn't seem to be too concerned about lung cancer. There is such a laissez-faire attitude about vaping. A lot of young people just do it like they have it in their hand and they're doing it all the time.
You know, vaping is a very common question. The real answer is we don't really know the long-term effects of vaping, right? It took us decades to figure out that smoking cigarettes caused lung cancer. Mm-hmm. So the question is, you know, are you comfortable doing something that you don't really know how bad for you it is? It's probably not quite as bad as lighting cigarette tobacco on fire and burning it into your lungs, but we don't really know.
That, to me, is terrifying. However, prefrontal, you know, the brain that's not developed, that doesn't make that correlation between,
You know, in this person's, since sometimes becoming a parent makes you rethink your life and your choices and like, hey, I need to be healthy. I need to be around for a long time to take care of this little person and guide them and accompany them through the world. So maybe that is an opportunity for them to rethink some health choices.
Yeah, it is bizarre to me. I'm sorry. No, I'm joking. 651-461-9226. That is the text line. If you do have a question for Dr. Begno or Terry about the organization, I imagine you're always looking for volunteers, Terry.
We are. We've got lots of opportunities to volunteer, whether it's serving on committees or, like I said, we provide rides for patients to their doctor's appointments, and we use volunteer drivers for that.
That's awesome. And is it pretty well used?
It is.
So patients that you're working, and how do you get the patients? Are you referred?
So we have partnerships with all of the cancer centers in the Twin Cities and in Rochester at Mayo Clinic. And their social workers will recommend that the patients contact us if they need a ride to treatment, if they don't have any other available ride to get them there.
And we have a little bit of time, Terry, so why don't you just quickly tell me about the history of A Breath of Hope. It's a great story. Was it the four women?
There was a group of five patients and their nurse at one of the local hospitals who, and this is why we're doing the Hope Totes this year too, is really based on the history of A Breath of Hope Lung Cancer Foundation. So they were all diagnosed with lung cancer and looking around the cancer center saying, wait a minute, if you're diagnosed with breast cancer, you go home, you know, in pink and with your blanket and feeling, you know, a lot of support. And there's nothing for lung cancer patients. And so feeling very underserved and underfunded, started a walk that they called A Breath of Hope. And it was a 5K run and walk. And
how many years ago was that?
That was in 2007. And by 2008, they had incorporated to become a 501c3 nonprofit called A Breath of Hope. And we continue today under that name. In totally based on patients advocating for themselves and knowing that they needed to fund the cancer, the deadliest cancer that there is and the least funded per death.
And why is that? Is it you just scratch your head that, you know, you want to raise your hand and say, hello, here we are?
Well, I think a lot of stigma around
definitely.
Smoking and the cause of cancer, which undeserved.
Yeah.
I mean, lung cancer kills more women than breast cancer. And people do not know that. Everybody thinks about breast cancer. It's October. Everyone's excited about breast cancer. But in general, there's this incorrect idea that people with lung cancer, you know, brought it on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so they should just get what they get.
Yeah. I know when I had it, they're like, oh, did you smoke?
Yeah.
Like you idiot.
Yeah.
Did you smoke? You idiot. And like, okay, it's all right that you die of lung cancer because you smoked.
Right. Like, not to mention the fact that, I mean, how many people of, you know, your age and your generation did smoke, right? Mm. I did smoke. I mean, at some point, you know, many people did. And it was a different time.
Different time. We are out of time. So let's say the website again.
abreathofhope.org.
And the event is?
Is our gala on November 7th.
In Golden Valley.
In Golden Valley at the Golden Valley Country Club.
Or the club in Golden Valley.
That's it.
I'll see you there.
I'll see you there. I just got my dress, so
yay.
It's going to be fun.
Okay.
All right. Have a great day again. A Breath of Hope, Terry Cannon and Abby Bagnow, Dr. Bagnow, University of Minnesota Associate Professor. Thanks for joining us this week.